Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Jennifer Abrams. Jennifer is an international education and communications consultant for public and independent schools, hospitals, universities, and nonprofits. Jennifer trains and coaches teachers, administrators, nurses, hospital personnel, and others on new employee support, supervision, being generational savvy, having hard conversations, and collaboration skills. Jennifer's publications include Having Hard Conversations, The Multi-Generational Workplace, Communicating, Collaborating, and Creating Community, and Hard Conversations Unpacked, The Who's, The When's, and The What-Ifs. Her most recent book, Swimming in the Deep End, Four Foundational Skills for Leading Successful School Initiatives, was published in 2019. Jennifer writes a monthly newsletter, Voice Lessons, which is available for reading and subscribing to on her website at jenniferabrams.com. Welcome to the podcast, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks so much for being on. And I've listened to you on other podcasts, and we met briefly over the summer in Danny Bauer's mastermind. You were a guest, and we did a little bit of breakout room and discussions then. And I previously read your book, Having Hard Conversations, but I know we're going to be talking about your upcoming publication today. But first of all, I wanted to ask about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I've got two examples. I was teaching. I taught for about a decade and then stayed within my district for another 16 years, which will be the second trench thing. I was a high school English teacher and things were getting a little tight. It felt like and I love high school English teachers. So there's nothing wrong with being a high school English teacher. They're some of my best friends. For me, Macbeth dying in the fifth act, every hour that I was teaching that play was a little small for me. And I was also in a space physically, something was going on with my body. I didn't know what was going on. And I was in a relationship. There was the, like, should you get married? What's going on with your body? And what are you doing in this job? And so I was really in a trench. I mean, I couldn't see daylight. I couldn't see what was going on. Ultimately, a couple things happened that got me out of that trench. And I don't know if it was divine intervention or whatever, but I broke up with the guy. I went and I just sort of had to deal, and there was just a lot of emotional pain. And I ultimately was diagnosed with MS that summer. And I then was like going to quit my job. And people were like, no, you know what you should do? You should become a new teacher coach. We can change your job so that you can stay within the school system, but you don't teach high school English and you still love teachers, and you should do that. And it was sort of divine intervention. And I'm still friends with the guy. My multiple sclerosis is fine. And I worked there for another 16 years. It was an interesting in the trenches. I then was in the trenches as at the district office level for another 16 years. And I then, it was the same thing. It was, this is too small for what I want to try to do. And I received a bunch of love from people and support to go down in my percentage and to build up a business. And what got me out of the trenches that time, honestly, was that Obamacare was coming. and I was able to go on state stuff. So it's been the system that allowed me to kind of do stuff, but it wasn't until things could happen that were bigger than me. And so I would encourage anybody to not wait until they get sick. Make decisions to leave the trenches.
Yeah. Well, those are really inspiring stories, and we see what an impact you're making upon educators worldwide. I mean, you said to me in the pre-chat how you're working with people in Hong Kong and several other countries in American institutions abroad, and had you still been working for a school district, you would have not really had time for all the consultancy that you're doing and all the writing that you've been doing for all these years. So, yeah, I really admire the fact that, you know, you found a place that where you can use your potential to the fullest.
Right.
You talked to me a little bit about your upcoming publication. It's coming out in April of 21, and it's called Stretching Your Learning Edge, Working Up at Work.
Growing up at work, baby, growing up. Cool.
So tell me a little bit about what this publication entails, kind of what your experience was, kind of the research that you used to gather information for it.
I'm really excited about this book. It's an edge for me, mm-hmm. and I bet it will be a learning edge for all of us in education, in that we have credentials mm-hmm. in how to teach our students, our grade level, our subject, but we don't have credentials in how to talk effectively with other adults. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nothing within our credential or qualifications usually did much past, you need to be a professional, mm-hmm. make sure not just that you wear pants on Zoom, but that you show up at your PLC mm-hmm. and you are a good team player. And we need to actually stretch just beyond that foundational stuff. Mm-hmm. And so this book asks us questions, I think, and it asks me questions. That's why I sort of did it, about where is your edge in terms mm-hmm. of your growth, your development as a human being mm-hmm. Who is over the age of 18 in your school system, no matter what your role is, what are you stretching yourself to do? Within mm-hmm. most of the world at this point, but in the United States particularly, there's a lot about needing to know our identities right mm-hmm. now and really look at ourselves and be aware of how our race and our identity and our upbringing influences how we see the world. Mm-hmm. I'm in a course right now where we're giving and getting feedback a lot, and to suspend certainty mm-hmm. is my second thing there, of not to say they're dumb, they're wrong, but mm-hmm. how do you take feedback, but also how to give feedback, how to ask for, how to request things, how to offer concerns, not complaints, and take mm-hmm. responsibility for that. And the book continues through two other facets with a bunch of stuff to ask mm-hmm. the reader, how do we grow up? And I'm mm-hmm. thinking we can do that at work. We don't have to, we can do that in our interactions with other people. And it's been fun. It's mm-hmm. an interesting thing to think about, because we're not normally in the adult development business in schools. We're mm-hmm. in the child development business. And mm-hmm. I think we can do both.
Yeah, I think that's an area where we need to think a little bit more, because there's so much toxicity in buildings mm-hmm. among staff, right? Because, you know, you assume, it's kind of like, would the teachers assume the kids know how to behave? Like, even like yes. you taught high school English. And so if I, like, you know, we assume the kids know how to fill out the heading on their paper, or it's Times New Roman 12 point font, double spaced, all their essays, right? But, you know, as a colleague or professional, we assume that people know the correct behavior in PLC meetings, or, you know, what is appropriate reaction to different things. And and so, like, I think this is a book that's really something that's needed these days. And a lot of teachers, you know, coming out of the school year wouldn't have been in the building, you know, too much. Maybe they're teaching in a hybrid model, but people are more isolated in their classrooms this year. If they are teaching in the building, so kind of re-entering in the fall, that you know, staff lounge type conversation, or the full staff meeting that's actually in person, right? And kind of having that reset of collegial relationships, right? And I, in your book, Having Hard Conversations, it talks a lot about how to bring up topics, right? Either as a supervisor or as a colleague to colleague, supervisor to subordinate, and vice versa. And is this new book a little bit of takeoff on the Having Hard Conversations, or it's more of a kind of a handbook into how to, connect or, have those, let's say, more professional conversations at work. So what's the difference between the two?
So Having Hard Conversations was literally saying, if you see something that's educationally unsound, physically unsafe, or emotionally damaging, it doesn't connect to expectations. How do you find your voice around that in humane and growth-producing ways? That is, I would say, sort of a slice of one of the facets that we're talking about. Okay. This to me is far broader. And that's where I think it's sort of on my learning edge. It asks us not just to think about our language, but to do sort of a self-talk, a self-assessment, some internal work about knowing our identity. How do we suspend our certainty? How do we get flexible with our thinking? Then it goes into taking responsibility for your language. And one piece of that is hard conversations. But also there are so many other linguistic things that we need to own and be better at. One of the other things is to believe, this is an interesting one, engage in reciprocity. Do we believe it is our job to be a value add in a group? Do we engage with mutual respect and collaborative skills in our groups because it's part of our job? It's part of what we do is to support the other adults in schools as well. That's a whole skill set that people are like, I teach first grade. Like, actually, there's so much more than you do than just teach those 25, 30 kids. There's a skill set around engaging in reciprocity, and there's a belief that you give and get in groups. And then sort of what we were thinking about the toxicity, I call it build resiliency, but it's really about how do you not ooze your emotional and psychological stuff onto others? How do you deal with that emotional hygiene? How do you sustain commitment? How do you deal with disappointment? How do you do stuff? Because imagine if we went into a group, went into a staff meeting, went into a team meeting or a department meeting, and we were better able to not just react, or we were better able to articulate, or we believed that we were there to contribute. And so how would we behave? And then if we got our feelings hurt, how would we deal with that? You know, there's so many edges to ourselves and our development that I think we, if we were more intentional and we were more thoughtful and we were more supportive of each other in the development, that we could then be just a much better collaborative team or school. And I don't think, there's a gentleman, his name is Zephyr Achi. I just got the privilege to meet him. He does Growth Edge coaching. He says, human development is not an indulgence. This isn't a nice add-on. This, if we don't really build up these skill sets, it causes exactly what you mentioned, which is toxicity. The school culture isn't the way we want it. Morale is low. And this is a piece of that. It's a piece of maybe countering that.
Yeah, and I really like how it made me think of like in a PLC group, you have those teachers, you might have, let's say it's a group of 9 to 10 teachers, and you have about 3 or 4 who are veteran teachers, and you have, 3 that are kind of halfway through their career, or, they've taught at least 5 years, right? And then you have a few new teachers, and kind of being able to have those, those semi-experienced teachers and those new teachers bring their voice to the group. I know in a lot of those PLCs, sometimes it is those veteran teachers who are trying to lead the conversations, right? And those newer teachers don't feel like they have a word or they have anything that's beneficial to say in the group. So this, I think, book would help then for just the communication, as you said, gotcha. in the PLC groups, right? Yeah. The roles people take. We talked a little bit in the pre-chat about even just the norms, right? In those PLC groups, the timekeeper, the note taker. I've been in PLC groups in different schools, and only one school I was in did they actually have those norms, right? Where probably 7 or 8 teachers in the department, and we all had our own jobs, and you know, it helped the meeting run efficiently.
And there's even more efficiently should be the absolute yes foundation. Mm-hmm. Like there should be agendas. We mm-hmm. should be our best adult selves. We should have tasks. We should be efficient mm-hmm. and consistent and all of that. And there's still the eye roll. There's I wonder why I'm thinking that. That's interesting. Say more about that. It's about teaching people to be a little bit less, to be more developed, to mm-hmm. even see outside themselves. We are so busy mm-hmm. and it's one more thing. And so there's just something beyond the one more thing. You could really learn, you could learn there. It could be a value add. You can create community. You can mm-hmm. get new ideas and it being efficient. Mm-hmm. it's all possible. Mm-hmm. I have people who are like, wow, we're too busy for this. I'm like, you can't afford to not do this.
Yeah.
It will actually make things easier.
Uh-huh. Because a lot of the time when colleagues don't feel appreciated or they don't feel like they're part of the group, that then leads to turnover. It costs the business more. And then mm-hmm. you have, you know, the cyclical cycle of those new employees coming in and then leaving, because you might have a group where people are just not feeling like they are able to integrate into that group or effectively work.
Yes. It's all there. There's so many ways to explore the benefits of this mm-hmm. and it's just, there's so many ways. It could be turnover, it could be financial, it could be increased test scores. I mean, I'm trying to figure out, I don't have the research on if you do this, X will happen. Mm-hmm. And I feel better as a contributor, as a participant, mm-hmm. if I'm my best adult self. Mm-hmm. And if I use those skills and I engage at a more mature level with all my inside talk being able to be managed and my verbal talk, it works better. It just works better. And mm-hmm. I have better relationships. And then we can start to really take on the challenges that we need to take on in schools. I mean, because mm-hmm. it shouldn't be about us inhibiting that mm-hmm. or getting in the way of what we really need to focus on. And a lot of the times we get in our own way, not we, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? The group by not being able to work collectively gets mm-hmm. in its own way.
Yeah. And I think especially at the secondary level, the kids pick up on that, right? They, you might be teaching right after a PLC meeting. And if it was just a negative meeting, kids can tell something was wrong. Or, you know, if there's tension between a couple of colleagues, they know so-and-so must uh-huh. hate so-and-so, right? Uh-huh. So, it's always, you know, that school culture always trickles down from the adults to yes. the kids.
Right. And if we say that we are, we're interested, not just in our content, mm-hmm. but in the well-being and mm-hmm. development of our children, that we're interested in making sure that the social emotional development mm-hmm. of kids is something that we value, we need to actually model it, mm-hmm. I think. And so the adults need a little bit of support, and that's what this book is.
Mm-hmm. So you told me in the pre-chat that you started working on this or thinking about it in October of 19. And so during the pandemic, you've done a little bit of research, tested out some of your ideas. And tell me a little bit about some of the work that you've done with these groups on the Zoom or Google Meet meetings and kind of the experiences you've had with coaching different groups in breakout rooms.
Thank you. No, it's been really interesting because we were talking about that I've been doing this internationally. Mm-hmm. And if I'm working with schools in Africa, for example, about your individual development and how that contributes to the collective work, I am because you see me, you know, sort of a bunch of it is the world views that I'm picking up in the work has been really interesting. People are like, yeah, this is exactly what you must do. This is how we live. Mm-hmm. One person I think I might've shared with you in Canada's First Nations, identifies as a First Nations woman in the northern part of Manitoba. And I was talking to her about one of the skills about suspending certainty and and not being so about advocating and this is what we should do. Blah, blah, blah. And she listened and she said, that's such a Western thing. And I said, excuse me, she goes, I've worked in the big city and everybody here just wants to just tell people what is right and nobody wants to suspend their certainty. Whereas in my town and with my tribe, this would be just common sense. And so depending on where I'm working, if you already have, you work in a mindset that there is, you know, my right way, or there's one right identity, or it's all about hierarchy or whatever, different parts of this don't resonate as much. And then all of a sudden I work with other cultures and they're like, yeah, what's the big deal? So I think it's been different. I'm working in different ways. So a 5-week asynchronous and then synchronous stuff, two shots with a team of a couple hours every day. Different groups are looking at it differently. And it's been really cool to see how I have to grow up to connect. it's stretching me. It's stretching me to modify it to, and that's exactly what I want to do. I want to become more other focused and bigger and more expansive in my ability to communicate. So it's been kind of fun. And it, of course, has been done on Zoom. I haven't left my my home office in 11 or 12 months. So,
You also talked to me about teachers need to ask why we all have to be responsible in the group. You know, when the school systems, you know, there are structures for the kids, right? Of when to use a restroom, when to eat, those type of things. You know, and the adults, obviously, you know, if you're teaching classes, you only have a certain time to eat and use a restroom. But, you know, we kind of all need to work together to be responsible when it comes to, you know, keeping those norms, like you said.
I also think there's even beyond that, of course, there is the foundational, whatever the school handbook is about what we value here and how things should go. I'm stretching people to say how you ask for help, seek clarity. That's on you too. It isn't just, they're totally vague. There's no transparency. They're totally fuzzy, blah, 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 blah. I completely probably get that. And you have a responsibility to also ask for clarity. People will say, I just don't like this. And I'll say, can you express that as a concern and not a complaint? Can you offer solution focused feedback? And so I think we need to take responsibility to do what the school of the district says is part of what the organization does, but also how do we show up to it? And what is our language? And then, as you mentioned before, how do you have a hard conversation? when you see something that isn't okay. So it's, I'm stretching the word responsibility to include more in your sphere of control than you might want to consider every day.
Yeah. I really like how you said, like the school handbook, because some people could be new employees and the school handbook or the staff handbook might not have been updated for 10 plus years.
Amen. Yes. Yes.
And a lot of staff that started a new building, they don't really have much of an orientation. It might be a district level orientation, but not a school level orientation. So you start your first day, you're given the staff handbook. It, you know, you probably don't even read over it because and then, you know, so a lot of people, especially the new employee, they're afraid to ask those questions for clarification.
Yes. I wrote a book called The Multigenerational Workplace, and I am happy for any of your listeners to send them this. It was, I would hand out this list. It was beyond a handbook. And I would hand it to the principals. I would hand it to the department chairs. I would hand it to the new teacher. And I would say, I don't know who is going to need to ask any of this or offer any of this, but I'm going to tell the new teachers that this is stuff they should know. And if they don't hear it, they should ask. And you can use this set of questions as, I've been told by Jennifer that these are things that I should learn. And so it isn't like you're weird because you don't know it. But it's also, you know, hey guys, these are things you should be ready to answer. Or if you don't want to answer, just already tell people. And people were like, it's never occurred to me. And it's not just the copy room or the bathroom. It's about grading. It's about technology. It's about meetings. It's about assessment. It's about, I mean, it's, and people are like, oh yeah, they wouldn't know, would they? And I'm like, and then let's say somebody comes in that somebody's needing to sub. There's a maternity leave. There's a sick leave. These are people who I used to find walking around campus, you know, in a January going, I never got an orientation. I don't know where anything is, you know, be like, here's some stuff. So I'm happy to send that because it's about clarifying conversations. I don't think anybody should be accountable unless there's been clarity. So clarity before any accountability. So always happy to talk to people about that.
Yeah, that's great. So you talked to me a little bit about the international schools and just kind of the structure in these schools. And I mentioned a little bit earlier about the schools in Hong Kong. So are you working with British schools or American schools, and kind of what is the structure and the staff relations that you might see differences from working with American schools?
Yes, I work with European schools. I work with British schools. I work with American schools. I work with international schools. Many international schools do not do, for example, the advanced placement. Advanced placement is more of a US kind of frame. So there's the international baccalaureate. And so in an international school, the curriculum looks a little different from literally kindergarten on up. And so there is sort of a mindset around what does the learner need to know, be able to do content all the way through. And so that kind of extends to, as one group said to me, we really should live out loud all of that as well, like whatever the risk taking, you know, the goals are. In US schools, internationally, or, I mean, if I went to work in an American school, in another country, there would be a football game. There would be a hot dog. There would be a PTA. They are almost replicating in a way, a US experience abroad. Even if people with other passports go there, but it's the US kind of frame. If you're working at a British school, they're getting kids ready for A levels and O levels. They have line managers and deputies this, and there's just sort of an administrative structure that's a little different. And from there, you can sort of imagine how things go, because it's about, people talked a lot about line managers. I'm like, a line manager? If I'm working at a school in Germany, If it's an international school, they don't have a union. They have something called the BR. Mm-hmm. And so the BR is very prominent. But in the U.S., it would be in states that have unions as opposed okay. to white people have those. So it's you have to sort of just who are the informal and formal power players? How do people see retirement in those places? Mm-hmm. What does the school look like? Do you have to retire by a certain year because mm-hmm. you have to leave that country? Mm-hmm. Do you get a job and you stay here forever because mm-hmm. you could stay there forever? Do people marry in this country? And so that it's just, you know, and then just stay. Mm-hmm. Just different places, not every country has their own way of doing things. And then international schools live within that mindset. And mm-hmm. then there's every type of curriculum that goes, and you can only imagine like what you emphasize would be mm-hmm. different by anything. And so I just sort of am learning how to do that. And that in and of itself is a stretching at your edge, mm-hmm. knowing your identity, suspending your certainty, taking mm-hmm. responsibility. And same thing within a high school. And just to say this, if a principal is going to go talk to the English department, it's not exactly the same way as mm-hmm. talking to science people. Mm-hmm. It's like running a, it's like I had a middle school orchestra mm-hmm. a teacher, and he's like, you got to work with the flautists differently than the percussionists. those, you know, trumpet players, they're kind of dangerous and a little rowdy. The clarinets are blah, blah, blah. And he knew how to work across his eighth grade group and who they, you know, what kind of instrument they played. Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of what you do when you are at a leadership position, and then you expand it to world stuff as well as, you know, all the mm-hmm. other stuff. It's really mm-hmm. fun.
Yeah. And I mentioned in the pre-chat, I worked at a private Waldorf school about 17 years ago in Norway. And we went on a staff retreat at the beginning of the year. So have you worked with any of these international staff where they're actually having that time? And usually in the US, when it's a staff retreat, it means you're having meetings, right? Or it's the teacher work days at the beginning of the school year. But this was actually, you know, a 4-day travel somewhere, right? And go on hikes, retreats. So
wow. That I haven't done. I've worked in a town, mm-hmm. not a city, in Ontario, Canada, where they went on retreat as a it was a Catholic school board. Mm-hmm. So it had a faith base to it. It had a place that they went, they go to cottages mm-hmm. Instead of cabins like in Minnesota, and they went and they were a community, a faith community. There okay. was prayer, and then there was it's really fun. I've only done that in Canada, now that I'm thinking about mm-hmm. it. That's not mm-hmm. actually true. There was not a retreat, but I've gone to sort of retreat centers to do stuff in the south as well of the US. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But no, We don't do that anymore. And I'll tell you what's interesting. People have tried to do that, and family and young children and going away for the weekend mm-hmm. ended up generationally being a big stopping block for mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And I think we've shifted just as a school. Like if you've got mm-hmm. a lot of young moms, they're saying, I'm happy to come to school, or I'm happy to go someplace yeah. else for the day, but I just don't want to be away from my kids. So mm-hmm. I think it was also of a different era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, anything for, you know, staff to get to know each other. I worked in a school where they had at least once a month, they did try to get some type of a event, like the, you know, the paint, the cocktails and canvas type events, the,
oh, nice.
You know, bowling, whatever, right. Making sure that you had that option. Not everybody had the time during the weekend, right? But that sure. they had those events that staff could, you know, just yeah. Get to know each other outside of school and have conversations that were school related, right?
I know also, and I live in the state of California, mm-hmm. that many of the teachers in my former district don't live close
okay.
to the place they work. And so it was, oh yeah, I'd love to go to happy hour, but my commute mm-hmm. is so long, or I've mm-hmm. got kids at home. So I think it's really dependent on so many factors. whether, I don't know, I'd have to think about it, faith-based schools or small towns or people that live in the town can make that happen easier because they're community already, or international schools do a lot of that because they're in compounds or sections of a town where the most of the people around them don't speak English, or so that they have a more of a strong community focus. It's really interesting. Just different places have different opportunities.
Yeah. And I hope that, you know, as teachers come back into the building, and that there will be more of a community. I know there's been much more of an emphasis this year on teacher well-being and just, you know, taking time for yourself. And I hope, you know, as the teachers are able to, you know, have more contact, I would say, in person with the staff in the fall, that they, you know, do see the benefit in just having that release time, like the, you know, the going out for coffee, going to a happy hour, the, you know, the socialization, right? The, you know, looking forward to going back to conferences, right? And networking. So I think it's so important to, you know, whether it's something that's planned at the school level or something that just a department's doing, or, you know, a district wide thing for particular teachers. Those are always beneficial. Out of everything we talked about today, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
That your development matters. And I always heard this, and I think this is an interesting one. I'm so certain about so many things. And somebody said once, and so I want people to remember this, everybody is 10% right, at least 10% right. So don't think you're always right. Suspend your certainty a little bit, get more curious. And that's a developmental goal for me.
Great. Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
I am at www.jenniferabrams.com. If you look me up on Google, I'm not the the women wrestler. There's literally a Jennifer Lynn Abrams, and she's in a bikini doing amazing things as a award-winning wrestler. I am the educational consultant. So just to let you know, if you look me up, that's not me.
And are you on Twitter? And
I am. I'm at Jennifer Abrams on Twitter, and on Instagram, I'm starting to flesh that out. I'm Jennifer Beth Abrams.
Okay, great. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much, and have a great rest of your day.
Oh, thank you.